Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. Spotlight on Industry is a program where we take you inside our region's manufacturing plants and processing facilities so that we can learn about the goods they produce, where they go when they leave the plant, and the impact these facilities have on our local economies. We recently turned the corner from winter to spring, and now that warmer weather has arrived, it's time to get outside and clean up the mess that winter leaves behind. Most of us will break out our lawnmowers from their long winter's nap, pull the cord, and just hope that they start. If you're like me, you enjoy getting back outside and taking care of that tiny little piece of earth that we claim as our own. For some, though, they may have more of the earth to take care of than others, so it's time to call in the professionals to mow, trim, and prune their little piece of heaven. When those professionals do show up to knock out the job, there's a good chance that their equipment is powered by an engine that was built right here in Maryville. In 1989, Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing came to town and took over the abandoned Uniroyal tire plant located just south of the city limits. Since that time, they've grown to be the largest industrial employer in Nottoway County and Northwest Missouri. When we come back, we'll sit down with Kawasaki's Vice President and Plant Manager, Steve Bratt, to learn about the engines they build, their upcoming expansion, and their plans to be annexed into the city of Maryville. Stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MarylandMO.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park provides Nottoway County residents and visitors with an 18-hole golf course, driving range, and a 9-hole junior course coming 2015. More on Mazingo's golf offerings is at MazingoLake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, health care, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. I'm Sam Mason. This month, we shine the spotlight on Kawasaki Motors in Maryville. I had a chance to sit down with Vice President and Plant Manager Steve Bratt to learn about the company and some important upcoming changes. There's been a lot of talk about Kawasaki in the last few weeks, about their upcoming plans to expand their plant and their plans to be annexed into the city of Maryville. We thought it would be best to go straight to the source for more information about those plans. So good morning, Steve. Welcome to Spotlight on Industry.
Good morning, and thank you.
Thank you for being part of the program today and for showing us around your plant. We'll chat about the plant expansion and the annexation in a few minutes, but first, tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been here and your role here at Kawasaki.
I'm married. I got a daughter that lives in Omaha and three grandchildren. The oldest grandchildren is actually a student at Northwest Missouri State. I've been in Maryville now for a little over 26 years. I was transferred from our Lincoln facility to help open up the facility here in Maryville. My role again here is plant manager, vice president. I'm in charge of the factory itself. I have a great workforce that helps me do my job on a daily basis. My primary function is to manage our facility here.
And how long have you been in that role of plant manager?
I took over plant manager in 2005 when Vice President Doug Sutton retired.
Now, I remember right before I came to Maryville as a student, this was a Uniroyal plant. When did Kawasaki take over this facility?
We actually purchased the building in August of 1988. We had a ceremony back in our current die casting area. I believe most of the city were involved. It was a very hot August day here that we purchased the building, and then we started our first engine production was actually June 21st of 1989.
And so then tell us about the products that you make here at Kawasaki.
Sure. Our main product is lawn and garden engines. We build engines from ranging around 12 horsepower all the way up to 38 horsepower. Some single cylinder, but most of it's V-twin. The majority of it is all air-cooled engines. We do have one model that is a liquid-cooled that we consider our flagship engine. That was transferred over from Japan about a year and a half ago. So we've been building that now for about a year and a half.
And so everything that you build here is for lawn and garden applications?
Lawn and garden or commercial type industrial. We do sell some product overseas. One of our engines are used actually on a rice planter. So again, we ship worldwide, but majority of it is a high-end commercial lawnmower applications.
So these are lawnmowers that are being used for commercial quality equipment?
Correct. They're very high-end. Most of the product that we build goes on equipment that a contractor would buy that would mow several different areas. But we also build product for what we call the premium market, our high consumer market, that is a higher grade lawnmower than what you would, you know, you'd normally pay for. These mowers are intended to last 10, 20 years versus, you know, a lot of times you go buy a mower and you're lucky to get 2 or 3 years out of it. So very high end product.
Okay, sure. So we're not talking about motors that are going just on something that you might buy at Home Depot or Lowe's. It's something that's a commercial grade.
Yeah, most of our product, we do have a little bit in the Home Depot, but not so much. Most of our product is bought at a dealer type ship. That's our direction. That's where we want to go. We want to stay in the higher quality, the higher end market. So again, it could range from a machine that costs $15,000 to a machine that costs $5,000 or $6,000. So,
and once that engine goes on that piece of equipment, is it branded as a Kawasaki engine, or does it become branded as whomever that end customer is?
It depends case by case by the actual original equipment manufacturer, or we call OEM. Some of them use the name Kawasaki, some of them prefer not to. We leave that up to the OEM. We love to brand our product with the name Kawasaki on it, but it doesn't necessarily jive with that OEM's platform or how they want to sell their product.
Can you give us the name of some of the OEMs, just so people have an understanding of once that engine leaves this plant, where does it go? You said some of it ships globally, but most of it here in the United States. But what are some of those names that people might be familiar with?
On the residential side, John Deere is probably one of our largest customers. They put a lot of our engines in their tractor mowers, but they also have a commercial side where majority of our product is used on that. Exmark is a high-end commercial brand. They're owned by Toro. Toro also uses our product. There's several out there. Husqvarna, there's Hustler, MTD, several companies out there. We've sold to Snapper. We've sold to about every lawnmower company out there.
That's interesting, because those are all names that people are familiar with, but I would have never thought about there being a Kawasaki engine that goes into those products.
You're exactly right. A lot of people think that engine was produced by that company, but it's very surprising once you're in the market and you know the market. Very, very few OEMs produce their own engine. They're usually coming from either Kawasaki or our competitors.
And who are your competitors?
One big one is Kohler. Another one is Briggs & Stratton. There's also some other ones out there called Subaru, Robbins, Generic, I think, is another brand. There's several engine manufacturers out there.
Our mission on this program is for people in the region to understand that the products that are being made right here in their backyard, most people don't have any idea of what happens to those products once they leave this area. They think of Kawasaki maybe as an employer. It's a large employer, but they really don't understand the product that you make and the application those products have once they leave this area.
We've tried to do a little better job at informing the people. For example, last year we were in the homecoming parade. We were celebrating our 25 years. We had all kinds of product that had Kawasaki's engines on it. We asked actually our 25-year senior people that have been here since day one to all be involved in that parade. And, you know, we originally started with about 100 employees, and we had about 45 people in that parade all riding product with the Kawasaki engine on it. So that's one way we try to show our brand. But yeah, you're right. A lot of people don't know what is produced out here.
Well, that's good. And that's why we appreciate you coming on the show, so that you can educate people about that product. So let's talk a little bit, since we mentioned earlier that you've been in the news lately, here at least locally, about your plant expansion. Tell us about that.
We are in current process of adding a little over 100,000 square foot building. We will be putting new machining lines in that building. We have a 10-year plan to be able to fill that building. Again, the cost of equipment is very high. It's very capitalized equipment, so you just can't buy it all in 1 year. But we have plans for that. We also have dreams of possibly even another expansion, but again, that's based off our corporate, whether the finances will be available for that. But we truly need this expansion just due to the fact that we can't produce enough product right now to meet our OEM's needs.
Will you have new products associated with this expansion that you'll be producing? Or is this simply you've run out of space here in this facility and you need more capacity?
It's basically just more capacity. We currently upgrade our product basically about every 10 years. We just had a new model launch that we're currently making now. It's probably about 4 to 5 years into that market. So again, this is just to keep the increase our capacities, but we are always looking at new developments, new designs.
So let's talk a little bit about the annexation. That's been another big topic in the news. Tell us about that. How did that come about?
Back in August of last year, we had our celebration for our 25 years, and we had our corporate president, Scott Kiyama, visit us. And through our conversation, I had mentioned that we were not actually in the city of Maryville. We were still just outside the city limits. And he was somewhat surprised to hear that. So that kind of opened the door for that conversation. And once we started talking about it, and I started talking about our president, that is actually Matt Kirishima here in Maryville, they were all, give me more data, give me more information. So working with Greg McDaniels at the city, very, very helpful on that. We did the study and we determined that it would be a good corporate citizen move for us to go ahead and allow the city to annex us. So again, we're proud now to be in the city limits. So,
with Kawasaki being annexed into the city of Maryville, how does that affect the industrial development revenue bonds? Will that be something that helps you build that expansion?
Yeah, again, we're applying for what we call Chapter 100 bonds. And what that does is basically we purchase the equipment, we give it to the city of Maryville, kind of a 10-year lease type thing, to where the city actually owns the equipment, the property. And what that does, it alleviates the property tax and the sales tax is a cost savings for us. Again, we're not looking for 100% of that savings. Anything that we can get is very helpful. The main thing is that it allows us to continue to invest with that money that we would be saving. I know this is to go before all of the city. Hopefully we'll have some resolution agreed upon with the city here in the next few weeks, and I believe by the end of the 30th of March we will have a open public hearing on this, and then the city council will vote yay or nay on that. Again, honestly, if they decline to vote yes on it, it's not going to stop us, but it will slow us down a little bit on future developments just due to the fact that it's going to increase our cost. But again, these are tools that are out there to help drive economic development. I honestly believe that you need to take care of what you got first before you start going out searching for other industries. So hopefully all these people that are going to be making these decisions will be on board with us and see that, yeah, we need to take care of what we have first before we move forward.
Do you have a targeted date for the groundbreaking of your expansion?
It could be as early as next week. Again, all of this depends on weather. It's all weather related right now. It's pretty cold outside. But our goal is to have this building completed by the end of August and start moving equipment in shortly thereafter.
And it's a 100,000 square foot expansion, is that correct?
That's correct. It's actually a little bit more than 100,000, but it's a good round number. Yeah.
And the article that I read in the newspaper indicated that you think you'll hire about 30 new team members out of that?
Yeah, we're currently added a workforce. I've approved another 30 extra workers already that we're interviewing for. We're currently bringing people on board basically about every 2 weeks now. We just hired, I believe, 7 people last Monday. and we're looking at bringing in another five or six again this next Monday. So we're currently bringing people on board, but yeah, our goal is to increase our numbers by about 30 more people.
One of the other goals of this program is to let the community and our listeners know about the culture of Kawasaki. Tell us about your team members. What's the culture like here at Kawasaki?
I believe they all know that they work hard and earn a living. They're very quality-minded. They're very pro-company. They all like what they're doing. My personal opinion is if it wasn't for our workforce and the people in our region, Kawasaki wouldn't be where it is today. They are a key asset, a key fact into why we've succeeded the way we have. Our quality is very, very high among our end users. They demand Kawasaki based off of, they know what they're getting, they know the reliability of that product, and our employees are very, very key in doing that, and they're very prideful of the work that they do.
And how many team members do you have here at this facility?
Currently, we're a little over 840 employees, and we have also right around 300 contract employees.
And then you'll be adding another 30-plus jobs to that.
That's correct. I think at the time when I said we're adding 30, we're about 840, 830 employees. So I'm not 100% positive on those numbers, but yeah, we are adding 30 more from where we were.
So I would say that makes you by far the largest employer in Nottoway County, if not all of Northwest Missouri.
I think the college beats me a little bit. Northwest University beats us out because they can count their students that earn a living or make money doing something as an employee. But I can definitely say we are the largest in the industrial side of it. So,
to your knowledge, which team member drives the farthest each day to come into work?
We have people come from as far as, I think, Red Oak, Iowa. That's probably the furthest that we have currently right now. So we recruit from all over, but mostly Iowa and Northwest Missouri.
So you truly are a regional employer. You're not just drawing from the city of Maryville and within a few miles out. You're drawing people from really all over the region.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, some of them may drive as far as 50, 60 miles a day to get here. That's great that they can come. I'm glad to have them. So.
Well, it must be a great place to work if they're willing to make that kind of a commitment every day to drive in. You're obviously paying them a wage that is worth their time. And just the culture of the company makes it worth their time.
I hope so. I mean, one of our goals or missions here at Maryville is to be the employer choice of Northwest Missouri. So that's a big thing that we look at. And obviously quality of life, the wages, their work, their benefits that they receive, we have a pretty good package.
So in closing, what's the primary thing that you'd like for our listeners to know about Kawasaki?
To me, the primary thing is that we are a loyal company. We really like to take care of our employees the best we can. Obviously, the bottom line is the bottom line. We all have to make a profit. I feel that our assets are our employees, and I welcome anybody that's interested to please apply. We're always looking for skilled, high-quality employees, and we'd love to have them as part of our team.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for your time today. We really do appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.
That's Steve Bratt, Vice President and Plant Manager of Kawasaki Motors in Maryville. Kawasaki was the first foreign vehicle manufacturer to open a plant in the United States. The idea goes back to 1974 when several far-sighted Kawasaki executives came up with a simple idea. If you're selling in America, why not build there too? We'll save time, save shipping, and employ local labor. Well, it worked, and years later, firms like Nissan, Toyota, VW, and Honda have all followed Kawasaki's lead. During the interview, Steve mentioned that they manufacture the engines for commercial lawn equipment, but we learned later on our tour that they also manufacture the engine for Kawasaki's popular side-by-side utility vehicle called the Mule. Those engines are shipped up to their plant in Lincoln, Nebraska, where the Mule is assembled. Interestingly, that facility also assembles ATVs, personal watercraft, and passenger railroad cars. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take you on a tour of the plant from the die casting department through final assembly and engine run-in to see what it takes to manufacture a Kawasaki motor.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MaryvilleMo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazingo is at MazingoLake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us, we've been visiting with Steve Bratt of Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing in Maryville. Kawasaki builds small gasoline-powered engines that are used to power primarily commercial lawn equipment and Kawasaki's utility vehicle called the Mule. We're about to go on a tour of their facility, but before we do, I thought it might be interesting and helpful to explain a little bit about how these engines work. The engines they build in Maryville are four-cycle V-twin engines, which is to say there are two cylinders that each contain a single piston. These cylinders are in a configuration that is, simply put, shaped like the letter V. This spring and summer, you'll undoubtedly see a lot of Harley-Davidson motorcycles on the road. Their engine is also a V-twin engine. So take a look at that engine as you see that bike rolling down the road, and you'll see that V shape that I'm talking about. Now, there are many variations on the internal combustion engine, but by and large, they all work with the same four-cycle process. Each of the pistons I mentioned are attached to a crankshaft. During the first cycle, as the crankshaft draws the piston down, a valve is opened at the top of the cylinder to let air in. During the second cycle, the piston is pushed back up inside the cylinder, where it compresses the air that has been let in during the first cycle. Just as it gets to the top of the cylinder, a measured amount of atomized fuel, in this case gasoline, is injected into the cylinder where it mixes with the compressed air. When the piston gets to the very top of the cylinder at the end of the second cycle, the third cycle kicks in, combustion. The spark plug fires and a small explosion occurs inside the cylinder, creating a force that drives the cylinder back down where it pushes against the crankshaft. That shaft is attached to a complicated set of gears that turn both a drive shaft for the wheels and another for the lawnmower blade. During the fourth cycle, the piston goes back to the top of the cylinder where an exhaust valve is opened to expel the fumes from the combustion cycle, and then the process starts all over again. So that's it. If you didn't already know it, that is how an internal combustion engine works. It doesn't matter if it's in your car, your lawnmower, or a power washer. They come in lots of shapes and sizes, but they all work on the same principle. Now, as you might imagine, there are lots of other parts that all have to work in perfect sync. There are crankcases, cover crankcases, cylinder heads, camshafts, flywheels, piston rings, connecting rods. The list goes on, and these are all terms that you'll hear while we take you inside the plant. Just know that they all go together in a specific order, and it's the hardworking people at Kawasaki that make sure each and every engine they produce is perfect when it leaves the plant. Now, let's take that tour inside Kawasaki's manufacturing plant in Maryville. Our tour guide is production manager Tim Melvin. Tim, what I wanted to ask you first is, there's a lot of pieces that go into an engine. Some of those pieces are going to be made right here. Where do the other components of an engine come from?
We do a couple of items. First off, we try to procure as many parts as we can from the United States. We're supportive of that venture, and we do everything we can. There are some specialized parts that we still import from maybe our parent company back in Japan, but we also have parts from other areas of the world as well. So as a trade zone, we're able to do that. We can import those parts, but we're trying as best as we can with our purchasing department to bring them in from the United States.
So these engines are, as much as you can get them, American-made.
Absolutely. That is our plan. That is our goal. There's just some items that it's still more beneficial for us to bring in from a foreign country.
So the first department we're going to visit is die casting, and we're standing outside that area, and I'm looking at a pallet full of what looks to be aluminum ingots.
Yes, sir.
So before we go in where it might be a little noisier, tell us just a little bit about that process we're going to see.
Our die casting machine uses very high pressure and very hot temperatures, obviously, to melt the aluminum. And what you see over here is exactly right. Those are stacks of aluminum ingot. Each piece weighs approximately 30 to 40 pounds, and it is put into a furnace. And the furnace is very large. We'll see that in there. Of course, it melts the aluminum. And we have ladles that dip the proper amount of aluminum out, and it is injected into our die. And our biggest machine uses 1,850 metric tons of pressure to hold the die piece together as that aluminum is shot in. Immediately upon the aluminum inside the die, water is coursed through the outside of the die to help immediately cool the piece. When the piece is sufficiently cured, the die halves will open, and we have a robot extractor that will go in and grab the piece, pull it out, and then it's getting started all the way through our process.
And this piece that we're going to watch cast, is that the head of the engine?
There are three different pieces that we cast here in our facility. We cast what we call the crankcase, the biggest piece of the engine. What we also call the cover crankcase is the second piece. And then we also produce the cylinder heads. Most of our engines here are V-twin, so there's two cylinder heads. So basically we are making four different parts for the engine here in this facility.
Now I'm feeling some heat where I'm standing. Not a lot of heat, but I feel a little bit of it. Where is that coming from?
This area right here, this piece that you're seeing, it's silver in color, that is our furnace. It's powered natural gas, and again, it holds maybe 1,500 pounds of aluminum at a time, something like that. And that is the furnace that is melting the aluminum, which, again, just that small little bit that you see out here where the ladle goes in to extract it. But what we're seeing right here is the molten aluminum bath. The receptacle is in there loading up on the aluminum.
Are those aluminum ingots loaded manually into the machine, or is that also done by a robot or an automated process?
Basically, it's done manually. We will load the stack of ingots beside the furnace, and we have workers who put on special equipment. There's a complete hood and coat that they have to wear and gloves, and we can open up the furnace, and then they will just throw the aluminum ingots in there.
Tim mentioned that Kawasaki melts approximately 1.3 million pounds of aluminum each month. They're such a large consumer of aluminum that their purchasing department follows the commodities market each day. They watch the price of aluminum rise and fall, and then have one of their procurement agencies buy it in large quantities when it hits a low point. They lock in that price and then place the order with their supplier, who will produce the ingots and deliver them to the plant just in time for their production needs. With aluminum being such a valuable commodity, the plant is careful not to let any of it go to waste. Any pieces that are miscast or do not meet Kawasaki's stringent quality standards will be put back into the furnace, remelted, and cast into a new part. Watching the die casting process was fascinating. Each machine has two robots doing the heavy lifting and dangerous repetitive work. The first one we watched has a large ceramic ladle attached to it that dips the molten aluminum from its vat and deposits it into the machine. Tim explains the process.
The robot is dipping that molten aluminum. Molten aluminum is about 1,300 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way, and it is dipping it into what we call the injection sleeve, and you can see it's hitting. And as soon as it gets out of the way, there's a lot of pressure generated, and it is going to force that aluminum into the die. It has to be injected in a very fast motion, otherwise the aluminum starts to cool. This robot that you're seeing here, again, it just comes back into that bath of molten aluminum. The ladle again is going to dip so it can refill and start the next process.
The machine we've been watching is casting crankcases. The crankcase is the sealed structure that contains all the moving parts. For example, when you look at the engine on your lawnmower at home, the bulk of what you see is the crankcase. Now, a key component of the crankcase is the cylinder that contains the piston. Even though the piston is lubricated with oil, a tremendous amount of heat caused by friction is generated as it moves up and down inside the cylinder. In order to minimize the risk of damage to the cylinder from this heat buildup, Kawasaki places a durable and heat-resistant steel liner inside each of the aluminum cylinders as the crankcase is being cast. Once the liner is placed by the second robot in its proper position, the two halves of the die come together with 1,850 metric tons of pressure. Tim explains the rest of the die casting process.
That robot is putting the cylinder, he's got the cylinder liners in its grip right now. And it's going in and it is loading those cylinder sleeves into the die itself. In the background, you saw the robot with the ladle with the aluminum. So now the die is going to slide shut. Again, 1,850 pounds of pressure holding it together. The aluminum's injected. This robot now has taken that piece out of the bath. It even dumps the water out of it, so we don't have that mess. Now it's being set into that trim press. And a lot of that extra that you saw on it is going to get trimmed away. Again, recycled. We don't throw that stuff away.
After the crankcases are cast, quenched, and trimmed, they slide down a small ramp where a worker does a rough filing of each piece. While the unit is still hot, they remove any larger chunks of aluminum that may be left over from the casting. The pieces are still about 600 to 650 degrees Fahrenheit, so the workers wear three or four pairs of heat-resistant gloves to protect their hands. Once finished, they are stacked into a bin and sent to the finishing filing area. The workers do a visual quality inspection and remove any excess aluminum from the key areas of the piece before it goes on to the next step of the process. As you can imagine, Kawasaki pays strict attention to engineer specifications and they perform quality checks all along the way. I asked Tim to elaborate on the company's quality control measures.
We do indeed have a separate quality control department. But in each one of our production processes, I don't care if it's die casting, machining, assembly, our workers are also quality inspectors. And in the particular job that they are doing, they have checks that they're supposed to be looking for. Whether it is just a visual, or maybe there is a certain tool that they apply to it to make sure that it's the proper size or something like that. Every one of our workers is a quality inspector.
As we left the die casting area, we headed over to the machining department. It was a long walk from one area to the other. In fact, there's a central aisle that runs north and south through the plant. I commented to Tim that it must be at least the length of three or four football fields. Well, I was way off. Actually, it's about the size of 9 football fields. Tim said that it's been measured at a little better than half a mile. He said that when Kawasaki purchased the building in 1989, there were approximately 270,000 square feet under roof. Currently, they are at a little over 800,000 square feet, and as Steve told us in the interview, they're getting ready to tack on a little over 100,000 more this spring and summer. In fact, the plant is so large that several years back, the employees at Kawasaki came up with an ingenious way to move product from one area of the plant to another.
I'm very proud of this. This is what we call the trains. And some of our storage of these bulk parts are in the back, but they're needed for our assembly lines. Well, we didn't want that many forklifts, you know, the exhaust fumes, everything like that. So there were people inside in our own facility that designed those carts. Those are very specialized carts, and they will follow the track exactly. If you're pulling a trailer and add a second trailer to it, you know, it keeps cutting the corner a little by little. Those will follow exactly. They happen to have the unit up front, we call it a tugger, and it's just pulling up to 10 cars at one time that they will feed the assemblies.
There are three main processes that take place in the plant: die casting, machining, and assembly. The machine shop was the next stop on our tour. This is a huge operation that encompasses about half the plant. There are 294 machines that are used to mill the aluminum crankcases, cover crankcases, and cylinder heads that we saw being made in the die casting department. The other machining area contains 232 machines that mill the steel flywheels, camshafts, and crankshafts that come from an outside vendor. When all of these parts are originally cast, they're nowhere near ready for final assembly. It's the job of the machining department to prep them for the next step of the process. Tim explains.
So what we have here is one of our crankcase machining lines. Again, we just came from die casting. We saw those raw pieces. And what is happening here is the worker in a series of 18 machines on this line, they are taking that raw aluminum piece and making it assembly ready. When it leaves this line, all the gasket surfaces have been milled. All of the holes have been drilled, have been tapped. It is ready to go to put the unit together, the finished product. So these machines, each one is dedicated. The first machine may mill a gasket, the gasket surface. The next machine, it may be drilling the holes. Each one of the machines, piece by piece, has a process that is being done.
So one man is operating all 18 machines.
Yes, sir.
There are multiple lines in the machining department that do the mill work for the cast pieces. On the aluminum side, there are 26 lines, and on the steel side, there are 16 lines. Again, each line can contain up to 18 or more separate machines that drill, mill, bore, and tap each part to get it ready for the next step, which is final assembly. There are a total of 10 assembly lines in the plant. We toured line number 4, which builds the FX-730 engine. This is a two-cylinder V-twin engine that generates 23.5 horsepower. As we passed other lines and got closer to line number 4, we kept hearing music. Not the kind that's pumped into elevators and shopping malls, but just little electronic tunes that reminded me of being back in an old 1980s video arcade. I questioned Tim about what we were hearing.
Tell us about the music that we're hearing.
Okay. The music you're hearing is specific for each line, and that is part of our Andon system. A-N-D-O-N, Andon. Andon is a Japanese term that means lamp. Basically, it is our communication device. That is what all of our workers along the line can utilize if they need any kind of assistance. If they are, if they spot something that's not quite right, they can hit the Andon, is our language, hit the button, and it signals our supervisor, or what we call team leaders. Basically, it's saying, come help me. I need to see you. Come talk to me. That's what it's saying. And the team leader will come up. They will determine what the issue is. They will reset the line. Now, the thing with Andon, if they push the button, I need help, then at 30 seconds, it will shut down because we don't want any defect to continue down the line. But each line has its own little song, its own little music that plays, and there's one little tune or melody for what we say is a call button, which is back to that come help me. And when it gets to that point to go stop, there's a different little melody that plays. So everyone is got it keyed into their head. If this plays, somebody needs my help. But if this is playing, I need to react quickly because the line's down. But it's different from one line to the next, the little song that you're hearing. And every one of our workers, that's what these little orange pendants, that's what they are. Each one of our workers have access to them. And any one of them, at any moment that they need some assistance, can push that button as a call for help with our Andon system. And just from speaking with different workers, you know, I can talk to somebody on one assembly line and well, you probably heard the music on that line. No, they don't. Because they get in tune into their own activities And pretty much what's going on in another line, they're not paying any kind of attention to.
When touring an assembly line, the best place to start is at the beginning. We started our day watching the crankcases being die-cast out of molten aluminum, and we then watched those same pieces being milled in the machining department. Now it was time to see the whole thing come together. Tim takes us through the process.
We saw the crankcases. We saw it back in the die-casting being formed.
Yes.
We followed it down a machining line and then putting it into a basket. Here's the other end of it. That basket was full at some point. It comes back up to the assembly lines, and we have the first gentleman who pulls it out of the basket. He's starting it. You can hear him as he's putting different parts in it. He's oiling up certain parts that are going to have some lubrication and need some lubrication for the startup. As soon as he's all finished over there, he's going to be grabbing one of these crankshafts, which we saw on the steel side.
Yes.
And it's going to be put into that crankcase. And then his particular part of the process is complete, and he'll slide it around, and he starts again.
So the crankcase is the basic building block of the motor.
Yes. Everything revolves around the crankcase. So that is ready. Over here to the side, we have a young lady who's assembling our piston. The piston and the rings, again, are purchased from an outside vendor. And you see she is putting the rings on the piston.
Okay.
When that is complete, she is attaching it to the con rod, the connecting rod, which is what attaches that assembly to the crankshaft. We have quality checks in place for it. That next machine is actually a quality check to confirm those little snap rings are in place. The next lady in line is finishing the piston assembly, and then she will turn around and will insert the piston assembly into the crankcase. That is what we call the oil ring. On the piston itself, you see the little holes in there.
Mm-hmm.
And as the piston is going up and down that cylinder sleeve, that steel bore that we saw back in die casting, obviously it needs some lubrication, all the heat. So the oil is coming through the crankcase and lubricating that cylinder bore through those holes. So this oil ring is put into place, and you can see it does not deny the oil from passing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is put in place to allow that oil to come in. These are just spacer rings that hold that in place.
Okay.
And then she finishes the assembly. And then the next lady down puts on what we call the oil rings. If your car, you've heard anybody talking about that your pistons needed a ring job, what has happened is the rings on that next station, for some reason, have gone bad. And you have to put new rings on your piston. And what they're doing is they're preventing the oil from getting up into the combustion chamber where the gasoline and the air mixture is firing. This
makes
is all
sense
a
now.
very critical area down here. And like anything else, if your building block is not started appropriately, then everything else down the road is just going to cause more problems. We saw the camshafts in the machining area, and when they were finished, they were put into this rack. They come up to us. They're not ready for us. We have to complete a process. There's more pieces that we have to put onto that camshaft to make it ready to go into the engine, but that's what's being done here. We also have, this is our cover crankcase, and this actually is what sets at the bottom of the engine as it sets in its normal operating position. And that's where your oil is going to be. The oil pump is in this particular piece. And that's what that little purple apparatus behind her, that is another one of those foolproof, those pokey yoke devices that allows us, it ensures us that all the right pieces are put into that part. This line, all the lines actually have a little miniature robot, if you will, and it's putting the sealant. That cover crankcase, when that's ready, it's going to go on top of that crankcase. We bolt it down, and then we flip the unit over. The cylinder heads, we didn't actually go back to where they were machining them, but we have to sub-assemble the cylinder heads. And that's why we have two ladies. This is a V-twin, so there's two heads. And this line is going at a quick enough pace, it requires two people. And so they're each building one head per engine. And this is where they're inserting the valves, the valve keepers. They're preparing that cylinder head to where this next gentleman that you see on the line, he's taking the cylinder head, and he has that specialized tool that is bolting and torquing the cylinder head to that crankcase all at the same time. Just to build the head, she has just a couple of seconds left. So what we do is we've given her the bolts and she puts some of the bolts in. And that fulfills her cycle time. This is the ignition coil. And it sets up there. It's not on this engine yet. You can see the flywheel. This gentleman is setting the coil, and there has to be a specified gap. But as that flywheel turns and that magnet hits this post, it generates a spark. And then when it passes by this post, it shuts off the spark. So, and of course, it's doing this maybe 3,500 revolutions per minute. Okay. So it's spinning very quickly, but it's just, it starts and stops. Spins around, starts and stops. The spark creates an electrical current which passes down this pigtail. Once this current passes down here into the spark plug, then it shoots that little spark into our combustion chamber in the cylinder head. And that little, I like to think of it as a little mini explosion, a controlled explosion, if you will, inside that cylinder liner that we saw back in die casting. And that's pushing that piston down, and as the momentum takes it back up, it's attached to the crankshaft, and that's what's making that crankshaft turn.
As we continue down the line, we watched many of the peripheral parts being added to the machine. There are various covers, tubes, hoses, tanks, an air filter, and even stickers that are put onto each engine. Each piece is put on to exacting standards and tolerances, so that each unit is perfect when it comes off the line. But before they can call the job finished, there is one last test called the run-up. Each engine is started by a skilled technician who listens to it very carefully. Tim explains.
This particular area is what we call run-up. Run-up.
Run-up, okay.
Every one of our engines, we start. We test fire, if you will. There is oil put into the crankcase. There's fuel hooked up to the fuel pump, and we start the engine and we perform some quality checks. We adjust the RPMs for our customers, things like that. We make it ready the way our customer wants it. This is a very specialized job. They have to be able to listen well. Is there any kind of noise the engine is making that it's not supposed to be making? Things like that. All of our data is captured in the computer. If there happens to be any kind of question on a particular engine in the future, we can go back and say, this is what the engine tested for us when we did our run-up on it. Okay. If there happens to be a unit that does not meet our specification, in the computer we label it as defective. And then we have a station over here that we call repair. And again, we have some specially trained individuals on each line that will fix that engine, whatever may be wrong with it, and get it back to that top quality that we expect it to have and our customer requires of us before it is ever labeled as repaired and allows it to come down and be packaged.
It was interesting to see how some of the Japanese manufacturing processes have been introduced to this facility that is firmly rooted in the Midwest. We heard Tim talk about the Andon system, which is that music that you've been hearing throughout the tour. It's used to help the workers zone in on what is happening up and down their line. As we approached the packing area, Tim mentioned one other term called Pokio.
Again, we build in some foolproof. Another Japanese word, we call it Pokio or Pokioke. That means foolproof. And right here with what they're doing in run-up, they have to tell the computer that that engine is okay. And if they don't, that engine goes on down to our packaging and they are denied access of putting it into the crate.
I see.
So it has to be triggered to be okay before they can crate it. But you can see here in this area, the final preparation. As the engine comes offline, there's still quality checks to be done. And that's what this gentleman is performing. The lady there is our inspector. She's just doing some final little visual inspections, making sure it meets the quality requirements of our customers. Ultimately, as the engine is set into our shipping unit, our frame, it is recorded in the computer, which allows us to know what is in that particular crate, is what we call it, the shipping unit, and to generate a packing list when we're ready to send it to our customer.
Kawasaki does quality checks right up until the final step of the process, which is to pack each engine in a specially designed shipping crate. The engine has a number and the crate has a number, and both of them are recorded into a computer database so that each unit can be tracked. As we wrapped up the tour, Tim told us that the line we were watching was packing up one engine per minute. Across all 10 assembly lines, they are completing approximately 3,500 engines per day. These engines are shipped to lawn care companies and manufacturers across the United States and across the globe. If you're in Germany and you bought a commercial mower with a Kawasaki engine on it, that engine came from right here in Maryville, Missouri. I'd like to thank my guest this month, Vice President and Plant Manager Steve Bratt and Production Manager Tim Melvin. Join us next month as we hit the road and head east of Maryville to Albany, Missouri, where we will visit with Diane and Heath Higdon of GHS Paper Tube and Core. As an added bonus, we'll hear from our producer and editor, Karen Lawrence, who had a chance to visit the Benedictine Sisters of Perpetual Adoration in Clyde, Missouri, to learn about their long-standing tradition of making altar bread. Once again, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MarylandMo.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.